You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret is out this week. Coming up, does hiring a bunch of your friends to work for you sound like a lot of fun? Well, our guest says you might want to think again. First, the mass shooting at a gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida in June sparked a national conversation about guns and gun rights. One common theme in the conversation from pro-gun advocates is that a good guy with a gun is part of the answer. Here's a clip of Wayne LaPierre, the CEO of the National Rifle Association from 2012.
The only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun.
And another advocate of the idea of a good guy with a gun is presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump. Here he is at a Republican debate in March talking about the terrorist attacks in Paris last November.
If they had guns on the other side of the room with the bullets going in the opposite direction, you would not have had 130 people killed. That I can tell you right now.
Trump made similar comments about the shooting in Orlando, but our next guest says that a good guy with a gun is not the answer to bad guys with guns and to mass shootings. And we want to know what you think at 800-642-1234. What is your reaction to the idea that a good guy with a gun can help to stop gun violence? What do you think can stop mass shootings in the United States? Do you have a concealed carry permit? Call in now at 800-642-1234, and you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. Angela Stroud joins us now. She's an assistant professor of sociology and social justice at Northland College, and she's the author of the book Good Guys with Guns, The Appeal and Consequences of Concealed Carry. Angela, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, why do you make the case that a good guy with a gun isn't the answer?
Well, it's important to understand some data around mass shootings. And one of the main points that I make is that a good guy with a gun isn't the answer to gun violence more broadly. Maybe on some rare occasions we do see cases where someone, an armed citizen who has a gun, is able to stop a shooting. But that is so rare that it should not be considered the answer, the one response. And what we're finding over time is that this is the view that's prevailing. So the NRA, as we heard in that clip with Wayne LaPierre, saying the only thing that can stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun, really sets up the argument in a really simple way. And the argument is there's nothing that can be done. The only thing that can be done is more good guys need to have guns. And that's just problematic because it's not addressing the bigger issues that surround gun violence in this country.
Now, Angela, because this issue about guns is a heated one in this country right now, has been, of course, for a long time, people on both sides are going to want to know where you stand on gun rights and gun control. So can you tell us a little bit where you're coming from on the issues surrounding guns?
Absolutely. And that was really important in the course of my research. I did this study in Texas when I was finishing my PhD in sociology at the University of Texas. And many of the people I interviewed who have concealed carry permits, that was the first and really their main question, you know, what are your views? And I am not an anti-gun person. I'm a gun owner. I'm not inherently opposed to guns. In fact, I admit that part of the reason I wanted to do this research was because the idea of hanging out at gun ranges was kind of fun. I actually, you know, got credit for doing that, which is really fun for me. So, certainly not anti-gun at all. But one thing I think that's important is that I'm not so pro-gun that I'm unwilling to ask difficult questions around gun violence. And I think that's important, you know, if so often there's this sort of idea that you have to be so pro-gun that you won't critique gun policy to do the research in an unbiased way. And, of course, that's not unbiased. That's just a different form of bias. I'm a gun owner who really wants to get down to the bottom of what's going on with gun violence.
And where do you stand on concealed carry laws?
Well, concealed carry is something that I think can make some sense. One of the things that I have found in the course of my research is that anytime I interviewed people who are very well trained, who have done a lot of research on the sort of mindset that you need and the sort of training required to be accurate. Whenever I interviewed those people, I always walked away from those interviews thinking, yeah, I have no problem with that person carrying a gun in public. Why should we only have police officers who are armed? But sometimes I interviewed people who had very little training, almost no training. I mean, to even call it training is sort of a misnomer. And in those cases or times that I interviewed people who had clear racial biases, I find myself, you know, really questioning this policy in terms of its capacity to make us any safer as a society. And so concealed carry, I think, as a policy is not inherently problematic, but the way that it unfolds state by state can at times be problematic.
Now, earlier you said that the narrative that a good guy with a gun is the best way to stop a bad guy with a gun, and we heard that with Wayne LaPierre there from the NRA, you said that's an overly simplistic narrative. So what do you think the narrative should look like if we're going to give the issue the complexity you say it deserves?
Well, I think, first of all, if we have people who are known bad guys, maybe we should try to keep them from having guns. So if they're not bad guys with guns, that's a good start. If they're just, you know, bad guys, that helps. But that sort of ties into the second part, which is a good guy with a gun is not going to do anything to address the areas in which we actually see gun violence being rampant. I mean, the truth is, for as much as we see shootings in Orlando and see how tragic they are, public mass shootings of that type are not on the rise. They've stayed flat since the late 90s. We average about 4 per year. But gun violence actually is a huge problem in inner city areas plagued with poverty, where guns are all too easy to gain access to. We also see gun violence being a problem in families with histories of domestic violence. And so one of the main things we need to consider is what will good guys be doing in those cases? And the fact is nothing. They're not in those areas. So that's an important part of the equation when we talk about the relationship between our ideas about mass public shootings and how gun violence actually plays out.
We're talking right now with Angela Stroud from Northland College, talking about her new book. It's called Good Guys with Guns, The Appeal and Consequences of Concealed Carry. And Angela, we're going to take a caller now. We've got Kevin on the line in Orland, Indiana. Hi, Kevin.
Actually, I'm in Wisconsin right now, but that's okay. The point I want to make, in Orlando, there was a good guy with a gun. There was an off-duty police officer who was working security. Hello?
Mm-hmm. Yes, uh-huh.
Oh, okay. And the other point is what scares me is there was a guy recently got a concealed carry permit, went into a movie theater, managed to shoot himself and a woman by accident, you know, but he was armed there to protect, I'm sure, from another killing of the sort that happened in Aurora, Colorado. In Oregon, there were, at that college campus, there were people with concealed carry permits, but they decided not to get involved because, rightly, they figured if they got over there with their guns out, the police would have shot them when they arrived.
So, Kevin, thanks a lot for that. Kevin, talking about some different instances where there were people with guns, and you talk about that too, Angela, in your piece about how there was an armed security guard in Orlando. What do you make about some of the stories that Kevin just shared with us?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely right. You know, we wish in these moments when we read about the sort of horrific things that can happen when a mass shooting erupts, we wish that it would be so simple as a good guy with a gun pulls it, shoots the perpetrator, and it's all over. But as that case showed, yeah, someone with armed police officer with training, much more training than many states require for concealed carry, was unable to stop Omar Mateen. And the reason is because someone engaged in a mass public shooting has a few things on his side. He's got the element of surprise. He's carrying an AR-15 semi-automatic rifle. And he also doesn't care who his bullets hit. And when you think about the difference between someone who's trying to shoot back in self-defense and someone who's trying to unleash as much carnage as possible, you see that, you know, not caring who your bullets hit really, really matters. On the second point about carrying guns in public and having accidents happen, that's one of those things that you know, pro-gun people, particularly those who are fond of concealed carry, get really irritated by, because those are people who are making bad choices about their firearms. But Kevin's right. Some people do make bad choices. So it's, again, you know, you might conceive of yourself as a good guy. It doesn't mean that you're always going to do everything right. You know, well-trained good guys make mistakes. And that's something that, that we just need to be honest about as a part of these discussions.
But is training itself part of the gray area that we're talking about here? I mean, the case has been made that, you know, when there is a shooting, when there is a dangerous situation, people without guns call the police, who are trained good guys with guns. So if people who did carry firearms had better training, would they be more useful in dangerous situations, do you think?
Sure. You know, in the course of my research, I asked people that, do you think that concealed carry should be as rigorous as that which police officers go through? And often if I asked that question, the person I was interviewing would kind of laugh and say, do you know what kind of training police officers go through? And they would suggest, you know, police officers can't spend as much time training with their firearms as we might wish they could. You know, that's a very difficult job with lots of different elements involved. And so, yes, they do some training, but it's quite minimal. But it, even so, it's more training than passing a hunter safety course, which is what's required in Wisconsin. And arguably, that's just much too minimal. Some states don't have any training at all. In Texas, the training was more rigorous when I started this research than it is now. It used to be you had to sit for 8 to 10 hours in a concealed carry course. But still, when it gets to the point of showing that you can operate your gun, you shoot a total of 50 rounds. In a 5-year period. And then you used to have to come back and renew and show that you still know how to use your gun. And you no longer have to have the gun range portion of that for renewals. So what we're finding just in general with gun laws is that laws and policies around training and expectations are getting weaker, so that access to guns and licenses is getting easier. And I think that's potentially problematic. Yeah, you know, people will say, well, we don't have any cases. We don't have many. I mean, Kevin just pointed out one in a movie theater. We don't have many cases of people acting inappropriately with their guns. That is true, but as rates of licensing go up and as requirements for the rigorousness of training go down, one might imagine that we could start to see more cases like misfires in a movie theater.
We're talking with Angela Stroud right now from Northland College. Her new book is called Good Guys with Guns, The Appealing Consequences of Concealed Carry. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Do you carry a gun? Do you have a concealed carry permit? And why do you choose to carry? Have you ever intervened in a dangerous situation with your gun? And do you agree with that idea that good guys with guns are the answer to maybe stopping mass shootings? Call now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll continue our conversation after a short break. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're picking up our discussion now with Angela Stroud from Northland College, talking about her new book. It's called Good Guys with Guns, The Appeal and Consequences of Concealed Carry. And we're still taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What is your take on the idea that a good guy with a gun is part of the answer to stopping mass shootings? Do you carry a gun, and does it make you feel safer? Call now at 800-642-1234 or post your thoughts on the Central Time Facebook page. And we go to callers now. We've got Kyle first in Dubuque. Hi, Kyle.
Good afternoon. Hey, just a couple quick comments. Just a second here. First of all, I do have a permit to carry, and I do think it is my right to defend my... You there?
Yes, I can hear you. You said it's your right to defend yourself, I think you were going.
Yeah, it's my right to defend myself. I'm just kind of curious that, you know, most of these mass shootings happen, you know, I think they're cowards. They happen where they know people are undefended, can't defend themselves, they're not allowed to, they're too young to, or they don't feel the right to. And then you have, even if you have a good guy with a gun and he shoots the bad guy, defends himself, it's fully justified. It's counted as a homicide. I think our statistics are inaccurate in that way. And I think right now there's a lot of reason in this area for people carrying guns is black-on-black crime that they don't want to seem to address. People don't feel safe.
And I know, Kyle, thanks for your thoughts. And Angela, you talk about the people who you feel are the most affected, and you say it's largely African-American communities where there's an imbalance of wealth and jobs and other inequalities. What do you think about what Kyle said?
Yeah, well, to address the point, it's counted as a homicide, so we don't know, we can't pick it up in the data. There is a category within the homicide group more broadly called justifiable homicide. And so we are able to see when someone commits homicide, but it's a justifiable homicide. That is a distinction that is made. So this is an area where we do need better data. We need more research on this topic to see how often does this happen where people defend themselves legally, you know, with a gun or in any other manner. On the second point, to, you know, the issues of black-on-black crime, I would just call that crime, but yes, it is concentrated in black neighborhoods, and disproportionately so, especially these violent crimes and the disproportionate homicide rates that we see. Gun violence disproportionately affects young black males. 50% of people killed with firearms in this country are young black males. But this is one of the things I find most interesting about concealed carry as a response. So it's sort of curious to me that we have this explosion in white males carrying guns because they're afraid of this crime that's happening, maybe not afraid, but feel the need to defend themselves from this crime that's happening in inner city areas. But that's doing nothing to fundamentally address the issues that allow for crime to emerge in these contexts. And to that extent, I say in my research that that's a factor that helps to reproduce inequality. When we say, you know, these communities, we're just sort of leaving them onto themselves and we're going to be armed to defend ourselves against them, we're not fundamentally addressing the issues that allow violent crime to arise in the first place. So I think it's not really a solution to that extent, even if it makes us feel safer, those of us who are least likely to be victimized by violent crime.
What did your research show about just the sheer presence of more guns and what's the consequences?
Well, you know, this is another area where there's a lot of gray area and it's difficult to measure. Often when people debate gun policies and gun laws, they'll use, you know, specific cases and say, well, what about Chicago? Chicago has a history of very extreme restrictions on guns, and yet they've had high rates of gun violence. Well, that's true, but just like drugs or any other issue we might want to study, boundaries are very porous. So Chicago can have restrictions on guns, and those restrictions have loosened significantly in the last 3 years. But that doesn't stop anyone from going across state lines and going to Indiana and buying guns with very few restrictions, where we know that straw purchases happen quite easily, and bringing them back to Chicago. And, of course, what that does then, it means that those guns are more expensive because they were harder to get. And so, you know, state-by-state laws need to be really kind of measured and understood to see how are they helping to control people's access to guns, people who shouldn't have guns getting them.
We're talking with Angela Stroud right now. She's an assistant professor of sociology and social justice at Northland College, and her new book is called Good Guys with Guns, The Appealing Consequences of Concealed Carry. And let's go next to Greg calling us from Superior. Hi, Greg.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So my question is, when you did your research for this book that you wrote, the variable of if a shooter is picking his target, how do you know if he's considering if it's a soft target or if it's a target that there's going to be a lot of people that carry guns? You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm not arguing. I think that a good guy with a gun probably, in a lot of cases, can't stop a bad guy with a gun. But the decision-making going into picking a target is probably affected by them knowing that there's going to be people there carrying guns.
Okay.
You understand my question?
I think I've got it. Angela, do you understand where Greg's going there?
I think so. It's, you know, when someone's going to perpetrate a mass shooting, why do they pick the targets that they do? This is something that's talked about a lot with those who are opposed to restrictions on guns.
Well, I think he's also saying that the mere presence of if someone thinks that there will be guns there, they won't pick that target. So in that sense, we may never know that a place is safer because there were possibly more guns there with people who had concealed carry.
Sure. I mean, and then that's one of those things. How would we know? There are an average of about 4 mass public shootings per year, and that's a very small number. In terms of sample size, if we were trying to say, well, what is the systematic sort of thing that these things have in common, these locations have in common, and why do people choose those locations? Schools have been targets, but the reason that shooters choose those, is very unclear. You know, we think that they choose them because that's where they were bullied, or that's just, you know, where they went to school. And so whatever was going on in their mind that made them think that was a good place for a shooting, you know, it's impossible really for us to know. Motivation is very tricky. But there tends to be the case that we say, oh, the motivation is it was a soft target, so they were going to go because there was no one armed. I just don't know that that's the case. I mean, we've seen shootings at military installations. You know, yes, a lot of those places, yeah, you have to check your gun at the entrance, but was that chosen because of the presence or absence of guns, or was it a symbolic choice? So I think motivation is much more complex than is often ascribed.
Thanks a lot for the call, Greg. And I think we have time for one more call here. Let's go to Steve next in Superior. Steve, hi.
Hi. Say, I wanted to bring up something you talked about earlier about, you know, the bad guy with his AR-15 just mowing people down. The police kind of here think of the greater danger theory, which about collateral damage in a situation like that, because you have to think that threat. So it's more dangerous to allow that shooting to keep shooting people than it is to just do your best as soon as you can to stop the threat.
Steve, I'm going to jump in. A little hard to hear you there. I don't know, Angela, were you able to make out that the greater danger theory?
No, I wasn't.
Well, let's move on here and talk about, as we wrap up, just less than a minute left here, but what do you think does need to happen to stop mass shootings, if not good guys with guns?
Well, you know, again, I wonder how much mass shootings should occupy the central sort of focus of the gun violence debate, given how rare they are. When they happen, they are horrific. And the 50 people, you know, killed in Orlando, that's 50 lost lives, and that is horrible. But when you look at the numbers, there are 33,000 deaths with guns each year in this country. And so if we think about the 100 or so on average who are killed each year, not a small number, but should it occupy the central role that it does in our gun debates?
Angela, we have to leave it there. Thanks to Angela Stroud, assistant professor of sociology at Northland College. She's the author of the book, Good Guys with Guns, The Appeal and Consequences of Concealed Carry. And you can keep the conversation going on the Central Time Facebook page.